The following Dharma talk was recorded in March 2014 in St. Louis, Missouri. It is one of eight recordings from the retreat called Suffering and the End of Suffering, taught by Bridget Rollins and John Yaffe. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. Bridget Rollins has practiced insight meditation since 1997. Recognized by the Spirit Rock Teachers Council as a community Dharma leader, Bridget co-leads the St. Louis Insight Meditation Group, teaches classes, and leads retreats. John Yaffe began practicing insight meditation in 1999 and has been co-leader of St. Louis Insight Meditation Group since 2006. He has served on the board of directors of Mid-America Dharma since 2005 and currently serves as its president. More information about Bridget and John can be found at www.dharmastl.org.
I want to talk a bit about the First Noble Truth. This may feel heavy to us. It may be heavy because it's about the noble truth of suffering. So I thought I'd begin with a couple moments of derived levity. First, to share the thought that when Bridget came over my place and we were like working on the schedule, dividing up the chores, the tasks, working up, you know, the plan, and we decided I would give the talks on suffering and the causes of suffering, and she would give the talk on the third noble truth, the truth of the end of suffering. And I'm saying, oh, that's fine. And then she leaves, and I'm saying, wait a minute. It's like we're going to a potluck dinner, and she says, I'll bring the main dish and the dessert. You bring the napkins. So that was one thought, which I've largely dismissed. The other is that from the perspective of you as retreatants, since we're talking about suffering and the end of suffering, I want to stress that it's important that you not skip the last day. So, all right, those are two entry point thoughts for you. So, suffering and the end of suffering, the theme of the retreat. I think you know this expression is it's a partial quote from the Buddha. The Buddha used this phrase to describe the overall purpose of the entire body and direction of his teachings. He said, regardless of how many talks I give and on how many topics they seem to cover, I teach one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering. And that really is the thrust of the entire practice. So don't be misled as you get into specific nooks and crannies of the teachings, which can be very attractive, but this is what it's about. We began this retreat by chanting and hopefully opening our hearts to the three refuges. And in these, we of course look to the Buddha. If we go really deep with this, we reflect on both the historical Buddha and also the capacity to achieve awakening within ourselves, to become or at least move in the direction of becoming Buddhas ourselves. I want to take a few moments to help strengthen your appreciation of this connection between the Buddha and you, or if this was a Zen talk, I'd say the non-Buddha and the non-you. So let's look briefly at the story of the historical Buddha and see how his life may speak to yours. Most of you know this story, so I'm going to offer it in a pretty condensed fashion. Siddhartha Gautama was raised as a prince some 2,600 years ago in northern India. He was sheltered from any exposure to the hardships of life. The story goes that at the time of his birth, his father was listening to oracles who proclaimed that the birth of the son would be very momentous and the son would achieve greatness, but it was not yet determined in what direction that greatness would unfold. He would either be a great leader of the world, a great king, or a great spiritual leader. and his father, who was a king and invested in the kingly career, career line, dedicated himself to, surrounding his son with everything that would be mundane and worldly and create a sense of obligation to this role of king that he wanted him to take on. And he hid from him all the aspects of life which might raise questions that would lead you in a spiritual direction. So he raised him on these in these compounds where everything was immaculate and clean and there was no sign of illness or death or anything like this. He had servants pluck wilting leaves off of trees and wilting petals off of flowers so that all he would see was things in radiant bloom wherever he looked. So he was sheltered from any exposure to the hardships of life, but became strikingly aware of these as a young man when he ventured out of the royal compound and toured the surrounding city. He had been so sheltered that he was shocked and pained to suddenly see people struggling with illness, aging, and death. And at the same time, through encountering ascetics and mystics as he walked through the town, he was inspired to want to come to an understanding of these states and all forms of suffering, and to find out how to alleviate them and become liberated from them. Feeling that this spiritual awakening would offer a greater gift to humanity than fulfilling any worldly role, even that of king, he abandoned his station as prince, abandoned even his wife and son, to become one of these wandering ascetics. He sought out the greatest teachers he could find, mastered and ultimately outgrew their teachings, investigated, practiced even more deeply on his own, and finally attained full awakening, but then went on to develop his own body of teachings and devoted himself to teaching and leading followers for the remainder of his long life. Reflecting on this story can be extremely helpful to our practice. Because the Buddha was simply a human being, albeit an extraordinary one, not at all a god, we can look to elements of his story in our story and can be challenged and inspired by the parallels we find. We are not princesses and or princes and princesses, no matter what our mothers tell us. But our life, too, is blessed and easy, certainly when contrasted to most of the lives on this planet. We too have been sheltered by the many comforts surrounding us, and we too have been groomed by our parents, friends, and social institutions to live a certain kind of worldly life, assume duties, and fulfill roles. We too have had our eyes opened by suffering, our own and others. And we too are undertaking a search, leaving comfort and duty behind in a quest for understanding and the hope of coming to terms with life and attaining peace. You may feel I'm overstating this, that what you're doing is not so noble. And of course, virtually all of us feel we could strive harder than we do. I understand that. I feel that. But I ask you the question, why are you here? Right now, you could be at home with family or ensconced with a good book, watching TV, or you could be out with friends. You could be at the casino. Yeah, that's the ticket. Every one of you left something behind to be here this weekend. Dare I say, in the Buddhist language, you renounced or abandoned these worldly occupations. And like Siddhartha, you are on a journey of seeking, even as you just sit here mindfully. Are we Buddhas ourselves? Not yet, most likely. But neither was Siddhartha until the very moment of his awakening. And we forget that. His awakening in that life only came after his living countless prior lives, even, according to the stories, making spiritual progress in incremental degrees, just as we do. So recognize and honor the Buddha to be work in progress that is you. And look at the many Buddhas to be in the world around you, certainly in this Sangha here. Feel the energy of the interest and dedication in this group. Feel and nurture this potential wherever you encounter it, and it is more likely to be fulfilled. After awakening, the Buddha's first teaching was the Four Noble Truths, which remains understood to this day as his seminal teaching. The Four Noble Truths, the noble truth of suffering, or dukkha. I'll explain dukkha a little bit. The noble truth of the origin of dukkha. The noble truth of the cessation of the extinguishing of dukkha. And the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of dukkha. The Noble Eightfold Path. As we've said, this retreat will offer a look at the first three of these noble truths, and the remainder of this talk will take a close look at the first. The Buddha said, "What is the noble truth of suffering? Birth is suffering," sometimes translated as stress or difficulty. "Aging is suffering. Death is suffering. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair are suffering. Association with what is not loved is suffering. Separation from that which is loved is suffering. Not getting what is wanted is suffering. In short, the five aggregates of clinging are suffering." Five aggregates of clinging are five different ways of viewing everything we can be aware of, out of which we build our sense of the world and the sense of self. All of that, everything around us, all the building blocks of our experience are suffering. I think we can all grasp this intellectually, but certainly on first hearing, we may be tempted to say, why would we want to get it? Why would we want to focus on this? Isn't this a grim or depressing revelation to kick off the spiritual journey? How is this a suitable place to begin? It's fascinating to look at the Buddha and say, not just what did he teach, but what order did he teach it in, and how did he, why did he choose to emphasize what he chose to emphasize? It's very interesting. So why did he begin here? Why did he begin with this really hard lesson? Well, first, isn't this first noble truth the elephant in the living room? The ultimate elephant? The biggest elephants you can imagine in the living room. Don't we know all of this when we really take an honest look at things? Isn't this true in your own experience? And when we suffer, no matter how dramatic we make the story of our suffering, doesn't the Buddha cover what's going on with that simple explanation? We're not getting what we want. It doesn't get much simpler than that. Not a lot of drama in there. But isn't that what it boils down to? We lost something we wanted to hold on to. We didn't get something we wanted. We bumped into some obnoxious people. Being true, isn't it exhausting to deny it? It's not a truth that pops up now, every now and then. It's all around us. Even if we're young and healthy, what do we see when we look at our parents and grandparents? Even if we have the latest toys, don't they wear out or break? Or don't we set them aside because we've grown bored with them and we want newer toys to replace them? When have you ever found satisfaction, ever, that was absolute, never failing, and permanent? And yet we constantly chase satisfaction. Isn't that crazy when you think about it? The Buddha is simply pointing to what we see with our own eyes all through every day, but would rather not acknowledge. And if we dedicate ourselves to maintaining delusions to keep this or any ever-present truth at bay, we're taking on a full-time job, a fruitless job that drains our energy and dulls the mind and senses. Turn this around and see what's real. Experience and acknowledge the truth of dukkha. And the energy used to do all the heavy lifting of denial is freed up, released, liberated. We become energized. We see more and feel more alive. We can relax and open to this truth because it is universal. When we acknowledge the truth in the first noble truth, we don't suffer in isolation anymore. We suffer, if we suffer, in common with everyone else. Big deal, you might say, they're still suffering. But this is huge. Our suffering doesn't separate us from humanity. It unites us with it. We're only human, all of us. And at an even deeper level, we're simply living beings. And dukkha simply and inevitably comes with the territory of living. Not even just humanity. Our suffering is not about us. It's not even about anything or anyone else. It's just what is. For all living beings. Finally, you're off the hook. It's not something you did. You're not doing it wrong. You're just impacted by the way things are. The first noble truth doesn't mean life holds nothing but dukkha. And acknowledging the first noble truth doesn't mean we seek dukkha out. It doesn't mean we do nothing to prevent or alleviate it when these are possible. In fact, acknowledging dukkha creates the possibility of doing just the opposite. Recognizing dukkha as dukkha whenever it arises, we can also cultivate awareness of its absence and appreciate that absence whenever dukkha or suffering doesn't arise. You can't do this if you're invested in denial. Think about that. If you deny suffering, you're also denying the opposite of suffering because you're turning away from the whole issue. You can't tell black from white when your eyes are shut. Recognizing dukkha as dukkha, we can come to understand the causes and conditions that foster its arising. We're ready to move on to the second noble truth. This lets us turn away from and avoid these at least some of the time and minimize the likelihood of that arising. We can come to understand some of the causes and conditions that maintain and sustain dukkha or suffering. And this lets us discover how to avoid making things worse and learn how to make things better and thus minimize suffering's intensity and duration when it has arisen. This work, this right effort needed to see clearly, investigate these challenging truths and experiment to find what really works to make things better. This work may seem daunting. Where will we ever get the energy to keep at it? Remember what I said earlier? It is infinitely easier to work with the truth than it is to maintain delusion. The work is fueled by the energy liberated when we step out of denial. Renunciation isn't just liberating, it's invigorating. So what exactly do we look for? What are the flavors of suffering? In other words, in acknowledging it, we want to be able to understand the nuances of it and see the different qualities of it because we may interact with them differently. Some of them may trigger us more than others. Our tendency to build stories can make each experience of suffering feel unique and special. But the Buddha taught that there were just three essential types of dukkha. As the Buddha would say in his teachings, what three? Which is his way of getting people to say, well, yeah, what do you mean? There is suffering that arises with pain. He calls it dukkha-dukkha, which is a great phrase. We often think of this primarily as physical pain, but it does include emotional and mental pain as well. And I like to help you characterize it by saying that dukkha-dukkha hurts. The others do something different, as you'll see in a minute. There is suffering when we encounter impermanence and unwanted change. This is called viparinama dukkha. Anything that is not permanent, that is subject to change, is dukkha. We want things to be permanent. They're not. We want people and things to be absolutely reliable. They're not. We want our possessions and our thrill with our possessions to last forever. They don't. We want absolute control. Sorry. It doesn't exist. Now you're all nodding. You know this. On one level, the whole problem here is simply that we're not getting our way. But this can go so deep as to truly be an existential suffering. So this Viparinama dukkha is very interesting. If things aren't permanent, then nothing has a truly independent existence. If we aren't in control, then we do not have an independent existence. If we are in constant transition, in what sense is there even an us or we to exist? Impermanence leads us to uncertainty, and uncertainty leads us to doubt. All mental constructions that call for the delusion of permanence are thus profoundly at risk when we see Viparinama dukkha as what it is. And we have a lot of those. We have a lot of delusions of permanence that we want to hold on to. Dukkha is the suffering of pain. Viparinama dukkha is the suffering of disappointment. It's that sorry quality that we said, want control? Sorry. And last, but I assure you not least, there is suffering when the mind spins out of control with thoughts layered upon thoughts and stories layered upon stories. This is called sankhara dukkha, the suffering associated with the proliferation of mental fabrications. It's a great phrase, the proliferation of mental fabrications. The mind takes seeds of experience, and from these seeds grows a dense thicket or jungle around us, in which we find ourselves trapped and stuck. We get into an argument at work. We could leave it at that. We could. But no. The mind tells us we've made an enemy. This enemy will poison the minds of our other co-workers, and hateful lies about us will reach the ears of management. Our careers will tank. We'll get squeezed out of our position and discover our job skills are no longer competitive. And now we're too old. And we'll never find a decent job again as long as we live. Ouch. We feel a pain in the knee. We could leave it at that, but no. The mind tells us we might have an incurable disease, knee cancer. We visualize ourselves wasting away. We see how our parents, spouse, paramour, and children will suffer. Our life work will never be completed. Our enemies will thrive. After our death, we'll be forgotten. Ouch. Get it? The suffering of mental proliferations. Dukkha is the suffering of pain. Viparinama dukkha is the suffering of disappointment. Sankhara dukkha is the suffering of the mind attacking itself. Why does the Buddha reduce the universe of suffering to these three types or conditions? By pointing out how simply and ultimately ordinary are these states and the conditions that give rise to them, he invites us to break up the sense of drama that we have about them. And you heard drama in those made-up narratives I gave you, big time. They arise, these elements of suffering arise from impersonal causes and conditions, and these causes and conditions are universal. They touch all living beings. Hating them and fighting them can't prevent them from arising or make them go away. In fact, we come to understand through the teaching of Sankara Dukkha, the dukkha of the proliferation of mental formations, that hating suffering and fighting against it literally makes it worse. The later noble truths help us understand more about why we suffer, especially more about why we create these mental fabrications, and in a very real sense, bring suffering to ourselves. And these later truths tell us how to work skillfully to attain liberation. We'll touch on these later in the weekend, but for now, just appreciate that the first noble truth is the starting point of this journey. Even if this were the only noble truth the Buddha had to offer, it contains within it the seeds of liberation. Difficulty is intrinsic to life. Difficulty is intrinsic to life. It touches everyone. It touches all beings. And you are neither at fault, nor are you at the center of it. So relax and acknowledge this great truth, and a vast reservoir of energy will be freed from the fruitless task of denying it. And you can put that energy to much more wholesome use. This is good news. So let's sit for a moment.